You are listening to The Bird Calls. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. Welcome you guys to an impromptu edition of the Bird Calls podcast, where I am joined with Steve DeWald of Blazers Edge. Steve, kind of a somber mood in Portland, I'd imagine. How are you guys feeling right now?
Look, if you're a Blazer fan, you're not prepared for a somber mood. You haven't been a Blazer fan for long, so we will survive. But obviously, I would like this to be a little more competitive series. But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, what can you do? There's articles on The Ringer right now. Kevin O'Connor is calling to blow it up. I think that's his nickname. Hashtag Kevin O blow it up or something, whatever Chris Vernon refers to him as. Dame Lillard was quoted in the locker room last night. He said, "They're making me give the ball up. This is a different coverage than I've ever seen at any point in my career. It's two or three layers of defense. It's tough to play against, man." Talk about what Dame is seeing out there. I think he had 8 turnovers last night, just frustrated, taking 3-point shots from behind 2 defenders, 5 feet behind the 3-point line. Is this a combination of him being tight and the Pelicans just playing staggering defense? What are the Pelicans doing that he's not used to seeing?
I think most importantly to frame this, that quote is, this isn't the first time he's seen this. The first two games of the Clippers series in 2015, he saw very similar looks until Chris Paul got hurt. He had Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan on him all the time. And at least at that time, he had Mason Plumlee, who's a really good ball handler for a center. So it wasn't uncommon for him to kick the ball to him and then have him kind of run the offense. Now, that being said, the Pelicans are doing a lot of the same things, and Portland just doesn't have that secondary ball, or actually third ball handler, because Rondo's been playing great on CJ. And I mean, they've just, and even when CJ gets the ball, they kind of have a plan to, okay, you can shoot these shots and we'll live with it. And it's been so effective. And Nurkic just doesn't have quite the patience and polish to really dictate an offense. And it's been astonishing. I think the craziest thing is, I think I read on Twitter that Damian Lillard has more turnovers than assists in this series. And that's, it's just unbelievable. And it's not uncommon to see Damian Lillard take, you know, 3-point shots from 5 feet beyond the arc, but that's usually when he's in the middle of a heater. So it's been very humbling, I think, for those guys in that locker room. And it was really disappointing to see the effort in the third game. I mean, at least through the first two games, it was frustrating on offense, but they still played defense, and that was not the case. And I wrote about it a little bit last night. I tag team the recap with Brian Freeman on Blazers Edge, and the Pelicans are quicksand. I mean, they're led the league in pace, and so when you get behind, when you surrender a 16-point lead in the first quarter, you're playing right into Alvin Gentry's hand. And I mean, Anthony Davis was behind the defense for the majority of the night, and then you have Nikola Mirotic, who's coming down the court as a trailer, or, you know, leaking out in transition. And I mean, that guy's hitting everything right now. So it's been crazy to watch. I wish it was the other way around. It was the Blazers doing this, but you never like to see your team lose, but it has been enjoyable. To the brand of basketball that the Pelicans are playing is enjoyable.
Well, that's certainly appreciated. It's nice to have a friendly adversary, I guess, going into this matchup. Of course, we're friends with the guys at Blazers Edge and talk to them regularly. So thank you guys so much for being so professional about all of this and courteous, even in the face of defeat. I do want to bring up something about game two. I know that the officiating didn't go quite the way that Trailblazers fans hoped that it would. I'm thinking specifically of the Evan Turner backcourt foul that resulted in 2 shots because they were over the limit at the time. However, I know that there were a lot of other controversial calls that had the Blazers fans up in arms, booing at frequent points during that game. Both game one and game two could have gone either way at many points in that game, back and forth battles. However, there are some who believe that because of some of those calls, game two kind of was tilted into the Pelicans' favor. What was your take on some of the officials' rulings?
I'm also a fan of MMA and UFC, and I think one of the big things that they always preach in that is, don't leave it in the judges' hands. And I think that's something that carries over to the NBA, is you can't leave it in the officials' hands. Yes, officials' calls can hurt momentum and can change the outcome of the game in certain situations. But for the most part, at home, you have to take care of business and not leave it in the hands of the officials. Now, game two, there was the foul that you mentioned with Evan Turner and Rondo in the backcourt, which was, it was for the playoffs, that was a pretty soft call, I'll admit. But there, the things that really irritated me were some of the inbound and out of bounds calls. Now, granted, I was at the game, so I don't get as clear of a look, and the angles that they choose to show on the Jumbotron might not be the angles that you see at home. So there is a little bit of gamesmanship when it comes to that from the home arena. But I think the Blazers have just been flat out played. And I think in game one and game two, the way that they got back into those games is, I mean, one thing they did kind of have on the Pelicans was depth. And you saw those runs come when Anthony Davis might have been off the court for a little while, or Jrue Holiday was off the court for a little while. But other than that, this series goes way beyond the referee's influence.
All right. And I remember specifically in game two, there was an opportunity for the Blazers at 100-99 following Mo Harkless' 3-point shot. And then, of course, there were 3 3-pointers in a row by Nikola Mirotic, that pull up by Jrue Holiday. And then after that scrum following Etuan Moore's 2 missed free throws, resulting in that corner three for Rajon Rondo. So definitely an exciting affair. Wish game three could have followed along the guidelines of game one and game two a bit more. Yusuf Nurkic, only 2 points in the first half, only took 4 shots. We saw him come out much more aggressively in game two. Why was he so quiet in game three?
I think he's been humbled on the defensive end. I think sometimes he gathers his energy from, you know, making some highlight blocks or altering shots and kind of dictating down there. And I just think that he's been put out of position so much at that end that I think it carries over to the other end where he's pressing a little bit. And, you know, he's tried a few new things. I think he hit a mid-range shot in game two, and he bricked one in game three and kind of gave up on it. I also think, I mean, this is a guy who's lost a job to a young guy before in Nikola or in Jokic. And I think Zach Collins playing well might play a factor. I mean, this is all purely speculation on my part, but Nurkic's attitude is something that I keep an eye on, especially with our friend Adam Mahrez at the Denver Stiffs. I mean, he very clearly outlined last year at Summer League when we were all hanging out that, you know, there is a downside to Yusuf Nurkic, and that could be his attitude. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case, but I mean, those are all things that could certainly factor in. But I think more so than the attitude, it's him having kind of been humbled on the defensive end, I think could play a part, because I think he's definitely kind of that emotional player where he gathers all his energy from. So I think that's probably the leading candidate for that.
Two-part question here. Evan Turner out with that turf toe. The first question is, do you expect him back for game four? And the second part of that is, Mo Harkless was highly effective in game two coming off the bench. He was a positive 11 in his 27 minutes coming off that arthroscopic knee surgery. And they needed and expected a lot from him in game three. And he was just 1 of 5 from 3-point range. He did have 4 assists, but only 5 points in 26 minutes. He didn't give that brand of defense that he did in game two against Anthony Davis in the fourth. How disappointed were you in Mo's play? Do you think that there was any effect with it being inserted into the starting lineup versus coming off the bench? And again, what is the status of Evan Turner?
So I'll start with Evan Turner. It sounds like he was practicing today from what I saw on Twitter. It'd be nice to have him back, but I mean, he was super ineffective in game two before he left. Even the play that I thought might work that I discussed a little bit on this podcast where he's, you know, taking smaller guards into the post. I mean, Anthony Davis is getting back to stop those plays. I mean, there's nothing quick about an Evan Turner post up is the problem. Like, yeah, it can work, but it's going to give the defense plenty of time to react once he puts his head down and starts dribbling into a guy. So I would expect to probably see him in game four, but at this point, I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make. As far as Mo Harkless goes, he's a guy who blew his minutes restriction way out of the water in game two. I believe he played nearly 30 minutes, and I don't think they wanted him to go really over that 15-20-minute threshold. As far as his performance, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of how Mo Harkless is. I think he's another one of those guys who's a rhythm player, and when Dame and CJ are off, especially Dame, it can really affect him because he's a supplemental scorer. He's not going to create a lot of his own offense. What I am surprised is that he's not. Another thing that the Blazers did really well in the Clippers series was getting Noah Vonleh and getting guys like Mo Harkless crashing the baseline on cuts, and Mason Plumlee was finding him. And I figured that was one safety valve that Terry Stotts would turn to, but maybe Mo isn't 100% on making those cuts. That's my speculation, or it just wasn't discussed, or maybe the Pelicans are taking something away that I can't see. But I think Mo will probably have a better, I mean, he probably will have a better game in game four, hopefully.
In game three, the Blazers turned the ball over 24 times, 6 out of 7 consecutive possessions in the second quarter at one point. Points off turnovers, 35-17. Fast break points, 32-13. Points in the paint, 62-50, although that got a bit skewed in the fourth quarter when everybody was pulled at about the 7-minute mark. Obviously, if you guys are able to cut down on turnovers, this becomes a much more competitive affair. With that being said, that was one of probably the best games in the Smoothie King Center in the Pelicans' young history, coupled with Manny Fresh and Juvenile, the Red Out crowd. What are your expectations of the Blazers going into game four?
I'd like to say that they're going to come out and put up a fight, but game three was the game to put up a fight. I mean, there's definitely pride on the line. I would assume it's going to be closer, but I don't think I've ever seen Damian Lillard this frustrated. Yes, he played some tough defenses in L.A., but in that series. But this what Jrue Holiday is doing to him is something I really have never seen before. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see it all comes down to what Damian Lillard does, and I think he's been, you know, this cool customer a lot of the times, but I think he's starting to let some of that frustration show. Like when he says something, even if it is calm, I think it has a deeper meaning, and I think he's starting to show the cracks. And I think, I don't know, it's really hard because this series really has been so surprising. I wouldn't be surprised if the Blazers return home swept with their tail between their legs, really, is kind of what I'm expecting in game four.
Wow. This is Steve DeWald. You can follow him at Steve D Hoops. Of course, BlazersEdge.com, where he contributes. Is there anything you'd like to plug on your way out, Steve?
Well, I'm going to be starting my draft coverage probably a lot sooner than I expected. So even though you guys don't have a first round draft pick, you guys can always trade back in. The Blazers could be looking to offload some lovely salaries this summer. So who knows? It might be the Blazers pick. But even though I don't know if your guys' cap situation isn't a whole lot better than ours, I don't think. But I'll be having a big board come out. Then we're going to do extensive draft profiles on probably up to 20 prospects. And then we'll be doing a mock draft with my partner in crime, Brian Freeman. So it's my passion. It's something I'm very enthusiastic about. So if you're into that kind of stuff, if you're scouting for future fantasy teams for basketball, it's definitely something to check out. And I'd really appreciate the follow at Steve D Hoops.
I appreciate it, man. BlazersEdge.com contributor Steve DeWald. Always a great interview. Always appreciate your time. Best wishes to you guys. I know you have a lot of questions going into this offseason. A lot of movement is probably going to take place there. Terry Stotts did a remarkable job this season, but it's not going their way. Kudos to Darren Erman and the Pelicans team for coming out and shocking the world. All 22 ESPN panelists had the Pelicans losing in this one. Before I let you guys go, coming up next, we've got Kevin Berrios on the Sports Bosses SB Nation's radio show. So make sure to stick around for that. Thank you again, Steven. Appreciate it, man. If we do go to game five, I'll definitely be looking you up again. Other than that, hopefully I'll bump into you at Summer League, my friend.
I will see you there. And if you ever just want to have a Blazer fan come on and chat, I'll always be here, because I don't think I'm gonna be having too many more appearances on podcasts here coming up real shortly.
You know what, I'm gonna be looking into some guys over Golden State of mine. I know I've got a friend over there named Daniel Hardy, but if for some reason he's not available and you're taking part in these games and watching these games being over on the West Coast like you are, who knows, maybe I'll have you come in and be an expert on the Warriors for us.
I can maybe put that mask on for a podcast.
All right, let's see what happens. Coming up next, Kevin Berrios. For now, I'm Preston Ellis. Let's go, Pels.
This is Pushing the Odds on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Las Vegas. Here's Matt Perrault.
Let's talk some Pelicans basketball. Let's head to the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans hotline, where we find Kevin Berrios, the Bird Wright, SB Nation's great site covering the Pelicans. Kevin, Matt Perrault, how are you?
I'm great, recovering a little bit from last night, but it's a great feeling.
119-102, the win for the Pelicans. They go up 3-0. That game was never really in question after winning both games at home, on the road rather, to come back home and to play like that. How good of a sign is that going forward? This series, in my mind, is over. It's about the next series for the Pelicans. But the way they're playing right now, how confident are you and fans looking at this team right now?
Oh, I think confidence is at an all-time high right now. I think a lot of us looking at this matchup that we had, we thought we had a good chance of winning it. We thought it would at least be an even competitive series. And it's been not really that. It's been pretty overwhelmingly one-sided to the Pelicans with a few moments here and there for the Trailblazers. But last night just seemed like was the night that they waved the white flag. You could see the quit in their faces. And I think they're done in this series. I think we'll wrap it up tomorrow. And confidence is at an all-time high heading forward. I mean, look, we might get a limping Golden State team, and you never know what could happen there. I think this is the peak level of Pelicans basketball right now, and the way that defense has been playing in this series particularly has been outstanding. And if that can carry over and if we could have some answer for Kevin Durant, I think nobody really wants to play us right now.
Well, speaking of the defense, is this the best you've seen from a two-way perspective when it comes to Jrue Holiday, both offensively and defensively for the Pelicans?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Drew's always been a great defender. His whole career here, he's been very solid. But about a month and a half to 2 months ago, he seemed to just take it to a whole nother level. It's like we would joke that he was an, we will not joke. We would say that he was an elite perimeter defender. But now we're sort of joking that he's at the whatever the level is above elite right now. I mean, he's super versatile. He's, you can see how pained Damian Lillard is on the court right now. He does not want to see Jrue Holiday's face for a while after the series ends.
I'm a Celtics fan, so I remember and I've seen playoff Rondo versus regular season Rondo. I know the difference, but you guys in New Orleans, how much fun are you having seeing the version of this version of Rondo now here in the playoffs?
Oh, it's been great. He's had his bumps and, people have gone after him throughout the year for sometimes showing up with a lack of effort or, just being ineffective in a game. But over the last couple of weeks, which were really our, stretch run playoff, he started playoff Rondo a little bit early for us because we needed him to get into the playoffs. And he's just been completely engaged. But even back in the, when you could beat on him for, lack of effort or lack of defense, he was still providing things that made this team function. He was allowing Jrue Holiday to play off the ball, and he sort of instilled an aggressive attitude in Jrue Holiday that was missing for his whole Pelicans tenure here. I credit Rajon Rondo's presence with sort of changing Jrue Holiday's mentality on the offensive end, which has now propelled him into being one of the premier guards in the league.
Does this team have the potential to get run 4-0? Is this series over in your mind, or is there any doubt that, look, the series might not be over because crazy things happen to inexperienced teams in the playoffs?
No, I think it's over. And last night you could see that team, the Portland team, just quit on the court. And, you're down 3-0. You still got to play another game here. Now you have a Friday night off in New Orleans. Yeah. I feel like they're going to start vacation early, and we're just going to wrap it up tomorrow afternoon.
Anthony Davis is obviously one of the best players in the NBA. But when Boogie went down, did his game change at all?
I don't know that it changed. The way the defense played changed. Mirotic's emergence, and especially Mirotic's emergence as a versatile defender, and particularly this matchup against Portland, allowed Anthony Davis to get back to more of that roaming free safety presence. which, you know, he couldn't do as much with Boogie on the court. And so I think we've seen this Anthony Davis before, and I would say, honestly, in this series, we're seeing Anthony Davis being more of a backseat guy on the offensive end, but a total anchor in the paint defensively, and the most incredible help defender that you could have. And that being said, he's still been amazing offensively, but you're not seeing those, you know, 40-point, 50-point games that we've seen from him in the past. You know, he's, you know, in the 20s, and you're seeing Jrue Holiday and Mirotić score more than him, but he's really, him and Jrue Holiday are just the two anchors of that defense and have changed the way this Pelicans team can play.
If this team, say they were to beat Golden State, right, and get to the the conference finals, even the NBA finals, does that help or hurt Boogie Cousins returning next year in New Orleans?
I think there's no chance that Boogie does not come back. I think the team loves him. The players want him back. The city loves him. The city wants him back. Now, there's this narrative that's been floated that this team is playing better without Boogie, and I don't necessarily believe that's the case. I mean, you look at his last game, we were the team that ended the Rockets' run. I mean, a team with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins creates so many mismatches for all of the teams in the league, except for maybe like the Philadelphia 76ers, who are like a very long and big team. But, you know, that's just a matchup nightmare. Then if Mirotić is still on the team next year as well, then you can play multiple styles. You could slow it down, let Boogie cook for some times. You could stagger where Anthony Davis gets to play center, or where Mirotić gets to play center with Anthony Davis. And you could play multiple styles and just, you know, be very versatile. And like, why wouldn't you want an all-star player that's totally committed to the city, who the team loves, and who, you know, is the best offensive center in the league right now back on this team?
Right. It's interesting too, because when Boogie and Anthony Davis were on the court at the same time, the thought was this team does not have enough 3-point shooting. You know, they have a shooting lack, and last night they were 11 of 27. Do you see a lack of 3-point shooting as being a problem?
In the off season, I wrote sort of a tongue in cheek plan of attack for building this team for this year. And the title was "Shooting is Overrated." It was sort of tongue in cheek, but I felt that we had the shooting that we needed, and that it was more about playmaking and defense and rebounding that we needed to focus on. And, you know, guys like Mirotić came later on that added 3-point shooting. Darius Miller emerged for a while. He's been in a slump for a little bit closing out the season, but he stepped it up a bit in the playoffs. And Ian Clark stepped it up towards the end of the season. And Etuan Moore seems to be coming back closer to where he was in, like, I think it was December, where he was having an incredible month. So I think 3-point shooting is great, and I think we have a lot of it. But at the same time, what we really needed to do is attack the paint and just build a defensive identity, and also just create plays for your best players. And I think we have a lot of ball handlers that can get guys in the right position, and the attention that Holiday and Davis draw frees things up for everybody else. And especially once Boogie's in there, because then you also have another guy that demands so much attention.
You know, Kevin, it's wild to watch the West right now and how much talent is in the overall in the conference. But are you even surprised to see how poorly Damian Lillard and Portland, how poorly they have played in this series? Because, you know, game one, people said that the Trailblazers, you know, got the game stolen from them by the Pelicans. And I disagreed with that. I thought they just got outplayed. And the same thing happened in game two. Same thing happened in game number three. So how surprised are you to see New Orleans up 3-0 right now?
I'm surprised. I mean, but going into this series, I thought it was going to be a very close series. I thought it was going to be a back-and-forth series. And I thought if it was a 6-game series, the Pelicans won. If it was a 7-game series, that meant Portland won. I did not see this level of play from the Pelicans coming. And I really do believe that Etuan Moore has been questionable sometimes as a one-on-one defender. I'm a big Etuan Moore fan. I'm not trying to knock him, but all players have their limitations, and sometimes his defense has been a limitation for us, especially since he has been tasked with normally guarding a guy that's the size of a small forward when he himself is really a shooting guard. But him and Rondo stepping up their defense and Jrue Holiday taking it to that next level and Mirotić being that versatile guy that allows Anthony Davis to roam just created a whole new defensive dynamic that really has thrown Portland off their game. And you see, like, Damian Lillard cannot shake Jrue Holiday off of him. He's all over him. And even when he lets him guide him into the paint underneath the rim, then Anthony Davis comes over and either tips a pass, blocks a shot, or just forces a turnover or forces him to get out from under the basket. So they're not finding anything comfortable. And when their team is built on perimeter and they don't have great inside presences, Nurkic is a nice player, but he is not like a player of the caliber of an Anthony Davis or even this version of Nikola Mirotić that we're seeing right now. It's just they just don't have enough to combat the complete shutting down of their perimeter players.
Right. Kevin, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you, man.
That's Kevin Berrios from The Bird writes SB Nation's great site covering the Pelicans, joining us on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans hotline. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. 3-0 for the Pelicans. I'd be shocked if that went to even game five. That's just been a lopsided series and a lot of questions with the Trailblazers. A lot of issues with that team as to why they performed so poorly. Damian Lillard, he's a legit MVP candidate for this year. And yet in the playoffs, the Trailblazers have been awful. Just not what you would expect. And yes, I know Anthony Davis is dangerous. And we talked about it throughout the year that nobody wanted to play New Orleans. But that was with Boogie. And without him, everyone said, oh, they'll be easier to beat. And it'll be a hard-fought series. But I think there's going to be a win there for the Trailblazers. And that has not happened for Portland, unfortunately. They just have not had answers for those talented long shooters and playoff Rajon Rondo. That's a real thing, by the way. Playoff Rondo is a big thing. There's regular season, aloof, crazy Rondo, and then there's locked in, focused, and really good playoff Rondo. And that's what we're seeing right now. A playoff Rondo who can shoot, which is unbelievable considering he never can do it in the regular season. Our final hand hits you next as we wrap the week on Pushing the Odds, SB Nation Radio.
Hope you've enjoyed listening to The Bird Calls on OTG and Nothing But Net here on Dash Radio. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.